Welcome to the Cold Coffee Club, a podcast brought to you by Houston Moms Blog. HMB is passionate about our community and the moms who live here, just like you. Our goal is to make this big city that we live in feel just a bit smaller. So we invite you to tune in every week to hear about all things motherhood, get a glimpse of the latest events, and all the fun activities happening around town. So go ahead, reheat that coffee, put your feet up, and join us as we cover the gamut of this crazy job we have all elected to take on and been blessed with, to be called mom.
Today we'll be talking with Randy Rubenstein, parenting coach and author of The Parent Gap. Randy helps parents with strong-willed kids. She helped me with my son, who was very defiant and never wanted to listen. She gave me the tools to speak to him positively, to stay calm, and to feel more connected to him. Hi, Randy. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
Sure. Thanks for being with us today. So tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got started into parenting coaching.
Well, I started actually as a stay-at-home mom years and years and years ago. I was volunteering at my kid's school, and I just noticed that the teachers were not necessarily managing the kids in the way that I wanted them to. And so I went to the principal. I was that mom. I was that mom. And I went to the principal and I said, what's going on? Why are the teachers so, you know, why are they yelling so much? And she said, you know, we're about to train them in this new program. It's called Conscious Discipline. Maybe you want to be our parent liaison. Full disclosure, you guys, Emily is one of my moms in my mama tribe, so we know each other well. But have I ever told you this story? Do you know this story?
Yeah, I think I remember it.
And so this is my son. My oldest son is 20. This was when he had first started third grade, and he was at a new school. I'd moved him from a public school to a private school. And so he was my strong-willed kid. He held it together all day. He came home. He was exhausted after school. He was angry. He was in a bad mood. And so I volunteered a lot at school just to kind of keep my eye on the pulse of what was going on during his day. And he had said, the teachers are mean. They yell a lot. So I noticed it when I was there. And when I called the principal, she said, well, maybe you want to be our parent liaison. And little did she know that I was this like fact-finding mama. And anyway, over the course of that year, I became kind of the resident expert. And because it was a small private school, I started actually training the teachers in conscious discipline. And I went to trainings in Florida. And it was just this amazing information. Like, if anyone ever has a chance to send their kids to a conscious discipline school, do it. I know in Houston, there's a school in the Heights called Travis. It's a public school, Travis Elementary, and it's a conscious discipline school. So I started there, and then I realized like I was using everything I was learning at home. And so I translated it into a parenting program, and I kind of just started teaching this parenting program based on conscious discipline, just, you know, and it was almost like a way to hold myself accountable, because if I was going to be teaching it, I needed to make sure that it worked. So I was constantly looking for stories in my own life.
Right.
And that's how it all got started. I also was on this hunt for information. I can't even explain it, but I've literally read probably 1,000 parenting books over the years. I'm like the one person who reads a parenting book. And so when my oldest son started high school, 9th grade, people kept over the years trying to hire me to work with them privately, but I wasn't a therapist. I felt weird to teach it one-on-one. And so I kept telling my husband, I need more tools. And I started researching coaching programs. And I did this year-long coaching program with this amazing woman named Martha Beck. And I learned all of these cool coaching tools. And then ultimately, I've married the parenting, the conscious parenting, basically, and the coaching tools together. And now I'm actually the founder of my own parenting method that is currently being trademarked, and it's called Mastermind Parenting. So that's kind of the lowdown of me. I'm a little unorthodox and I'm kind of a rebel, and I paved my own way.
And that's why you have a following.
I love what I do. Thank you.
Awesome. Well, we have we reached out to some of the women in our community if they had any questions, sort of like in a Dear Randy format, wanting to know how you would handle these specific situations. So one of the contributors, her name is Vicky Lee Yip. She wanted to know, where do we draw the line of being an advocate for our kids and being lawnmower parents? And lawnmower parents, in case you don't know, is where parents just sort of mow down any and all challenges in their children's way. They just want to fix the problem for them and move on. So I know you have a lot to say on that.
Well, first of all, I'd never heard the term before, lawnmower parents. So love that. And I'm putting my hand up. You guys can't see me. And I'm saying, former lawnmower parent right here that still creeps up. I'm a classic fixer. And I find that lots of my moms are.
Yeah.
When we jump into fix-it mode, we accidentally send our kids the memo, like the subconscious memo, that they need to be fixed.
Right.
And I remember my son at about 8 looking at me, because I think I was a classic lawnmower. I think that's why I went into the principal's office, like, what's going on? Your teachers aren't doing it the right way. What can I do? And I just wanted to steamroll. Mm-hmm. And at one point, my son looked at me and he said, there's nothing wrong with me. And that was my big kind of wake-up call to stop trying to fix him. No one wants to be fixed. So there's a fine line between advocating for your kids and jumping into fix-it mode. Mm-hmm. And so when you find that your child is in some way, like there's some skill that's lacking, or there's something that's going on during their day or during their life where you can tell they're struggling, what you want to do is you want to show up with empathy. And how that looks different than fix-it mode is empathy starts with you see their child, you see their perspective, and you convey it. So you literally put yourself in their shoes and you're like, I noticed that such and so. I noticed that you're really struggling with science. Or I noticed you get super frustrated with science. Tell me more about that. You want to get them talking versus you just jumping into solution mode. Mm-hmm. So the minute they start talking, you're not going to offer your solutions. You're going to do this active listening piece, which is literally you hear them and you mirror back whatever they say. And they're like, oh, you know what? She gives us this work and she doesn't even explain it to us. You know, they always go into that blame mode. And you're like, so she gave you this work and she didn't explain it? Like that's got to be frustrating. You're not, all you do is mirror back their frustration. Now, what happens when you do empathy the right way is that it is literally like the magical serum for all humans. It makes us feel connected to the other person. And when we're connected, then we trust them to guide us and to help us find solutions. So this process, instead of us jumping into the fix-it mode and then frustrating our kids and then them feeling like we're on opposite teams and not taking our guidance, when we learn to do it this way, they actually ask us for their guidance and they're willing to accept our guidance. And so if you notice something's going on at school, I would say or with a friend or whatever, the first thing to do is to connect with your child through empathy, through seeing their perspective, through active listening, through being an investigator, and wait to earn the right to help them problem solve it. And that's where this is different than just jumping into fix-it mode, because now you're building their confidence, you're empowering them to fix the issues themselves, and you're teaching them all these powerful tools.
Because it's probably already inside of them. It's just a matter of giving them the confidence to see it.
100%. It's like anything. I mean, think about it. When you find your own solutions, like we can do this as grown-ups. When you're venting to your spouse about some issue you have in your life, and, you know, so men are very prone to jumping into fix-it mode. It's kind of a primal thing. Mm-hmm. You know, they're solution-oriented. They want to protect the people they love emotionally and physically. So they want to jump into fix-it mode. But if you think about it, when you're having an issue and you, you know, just vent to your spouse. And then your spouse is like, well, why don't you do this? And why don't you, you don't even need that job. Just quit. Or that friend, I told you she's terrible. Of course she's talking. When anyone jumps into fix it mode, all it does is frustrate us versus when that person just shows up and is like, you've got this. And I totally get it. I've been there before too. You get to feel like you're finding your own solutions. And the thing I'll say is the advocating part, I've been a big advocate for my kids over the years, mostly through empowering them. And there have been times where I've needed to send the teacher an email, or I've needed to, you know, step in some way. Mm-hmm. And once they're old enough, I allow them to invite me to do that. I offer it. I say, would you like me to help in some way? How can I support you? Would it be helpful if I sent the teacher an email? And you guys just know, if you're sending the teacher an email, use the sandwich method. Positive, area for improvement, positive. Mm-hmm. So we want to make sure, I mean, teachers manage a lot, and we want to make sure they know we're appreciating them, we're celebrating right. them. Here's what we're noticing. And then something positive like, how can I support you? How can I help you? To let them know you're on the same team, because that's how your kids really benefit.
Yeah. So not feel like they're being attacked per se. Just
exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And I've heard this from after working with a number of teachers over the years. You know, when they feel like they are aligned and it's a team of adults helping the child benefits. Right. But when they feel like it's team parent versus team teacher, no one benefits.
Right.
So we want to really, in every way possible, show up for our teachers and let them know, I am here, I want to work with you, how can I support you, and how can I support my kid ultimately?
Yeah. Cool. We had another girl, woman, mother from our community. Her name is Jackie Hopkins Bond, and she wanted to know some ways to entertain and educate a bright 3-year-old. She's a stay-at-home mom with no car during the day, a tiny budget, no yard or park that they can walk to, and she has a 4-month-old son. She said her daughter is watching too much TV, but she's at a loss.
Okay, Jackie, you're in the trenches. I feel ya. You're doing it. And I just want you to know that you can, I'm going to give you some suggestions, and anything that feels like this makes me feel calmer in my body is what you're going to want to start implementing. And anything that feels like oh gosh, this is just another thing on my plate, you're going to ignore. So pick and choose what feels right for you. This is what I would say. Structure, structure, structure. So, and I say this as, like I said, I'm a rebel tendency. I defy structure, but with my strong-willed, you know, oldest son, I realized, like, if I didn't have structure in place, he would tank. So I had to start making dinner or providing the dinner at a certain time, stop going to the restaurants. I had to institute the bedtime at a really decent hour, really prioritize his sleep. I'm a big, big proponent of tons of sleep, because I think a well-rested kid is so much more of a happier kid and also a more enjoyable kid.
For sure.
So I would say 3-year-old, we got, you know, a lot of sleep happening at night. And then in the morning, I mean, remember, you're going to still be giving them a nap at 3. And when they drop, I mean, I personally am a proponent, especially if your kids are home with you, of napping them until they're 5. So, and they're going to go through different stages of development where you think they're dropping their nap.
Mm-hmm.
But if you stick with it, they're not dropping their nap. And stay-at-home mama, you're on 24/7.
Yeah, you need that time.
Yeah. You need that break. So think about it. You've got in the morning, you structure it where we've got play to almost like preschool.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you've got an activity, you've got some play, you've got a little mid-morning snack, you do lunch, you do nap, they wake up, there's another little activity, with them we have a mid-afternoon snack. You know, we're going to structure it almost like they would structure it at daycare.
Right.
And, you know, in terms of replacing all the TV time, I'm a real mom. Like, especially with little kids where the days, like, never seem to end, I always did some TV.
It can definitely be a lifesaver sometimes.
You know.
Especially if you have a newborn at home and it's unpredictable what's going to happen with the baby, you know.
Yeah, just use the TV when it works for you. So, you know, during dinner prep. Also, you know, try and get some of that dinner prep done during nap time so that you're not taking as much time. But like during dinner prep, knowing that like in the morning when the baby's napping, you know, if you want to do one show at that time, but structure when that TV time is going to come and stick to it. The other thing I would say is, you almost want to set up a play area, kind of like a Montessori classroom. So if you think about it, it's like you want to really help her be an independent player as much as possible. And because mama's got housework to do and things to do. So if we set up the play area where we've got like an art area, and I know this sounds super crafty and crazy, and I'm really not crafty and crazy, but like an area for blocks, an area for puzzles. In Montessori, they call it workstations. Right. So it's like almost like workstations. So you're going to make it enticing. You've got a little dollhouse. You've got all those little figurines. If you've got, you know, a kid that's into cars, you've got, a little thing that like, oh, we're going to pull out the cars now. So you have different workstations in the playroom because kids learn through play. So if it's almost like you set up that playroom, I always have had some kind of a little play area off the kitchen in my household because they want to be with you. And I had things to do in the kitchen. So set it up, have your little art station, know when you're going to pull out that easel and put it on your, you know, on your balcony or on your back patio or some little tiny area outside where you can throw, you know, that old sheet on the ground and you've got that easel and all of a sudden it's art fun and there's 30 minutes or your, you know, drawing board, I mean the, from Hobby Lobby or somewhere like that where you have the white paper and you have the pencils and you have the markers. It all looks so enticing and inviting and you can kind of help orchestrate it, but you're also helping your child learn how to play independently.
Exactly.
So that you're not the constant playmate. Some play with the mama is great, but you really want to teach them to be that independent player because they have so much magical thinking. Mm-hmm. And when they look around and there's all these fun basic toys and it's like, we're going to work on this now and now we're going to work on that. It helps your day to feel more structured.
Right. And when they do start school, they'll be more prepared and not so dependent on the teacher or the parent. The transition will be easier.
100%. And the other thing I was going to say is, you know, create some kind of like a schedule, like a visual you can put on the wall. And kids don't know numbers or understand time, but you can put visuals. So like if first thing in the morning they get up and they have breakfast. If first thing in the morning they get up and they have breakfast, then it's like you take a picture of them waking up. You take a picture of them having breakfast. You take a picture of them in their playroom. You take a picture of snack. Like take those pictures and put up the visual so that when they're like, Mommy, can I watch a show? You're like, oh, go look at the schedule. Is it showtime yet? I think it's still playtime.
Mm-hmm.
And you can reinforce that structure so that there's just some kind of semblance of order to your
day. And they'll feel more comfortable too, just knowing that it's always the same routine every single day and
yes,
and no surprises.
Structure, it's like people say, kids love boundaries. Well, structure, boundaries, knowing what to expect helps your kids to feel safe in the world.
Right.
And it also helps you to feel like in your, what I call pack leadership energy, where you've got a plan and it's not all so haphazard. Mm-hmm. And so it just benefits everyone.
Totally. Okay. And then we have some questions from our co-owner, Megan Clanahan. She wanted to know, how do you split time when you have a child with special needs? She has a child who requires extra attention both at school and medically, and a lot of times she feels like her brother gets a bit of the shaft because so much focus is put on her daughter. She said her son is just easier, and she doesn't want him to feel neglected, and she doesn't want her daughter to feel spoiled with all the attention.
So don't worry about your daughter feeling spoiled. number one. You're just helping her with her skill building, and she has more needs right now to be met, period, end of story. So I would say that the main obstacle here is really your thinking, because this is the thing. A family is a team, and everybody on the team brings a different skill set and a different skill level. So what do we know about someone who life is harder for and they have to work harder to develop and build these skills? It's like the rest of the team shows up and rallies. I'll never forget when you're in Little League, my son had a special needs child on his team. And it was amazing. It was actually one of the moms who was the team mom. She was this amazing woman, and she taught the boys to cheer him on when he came up to bat. And it was unbelievable to watch the boys like really cheer him on. And what happened towards the end of the season was this little boy got a hit. And so instead of where a lot of times you'll look at when you have a team and one of the children gets up to bat and never hits the ball, the other kids will be like,
oh. It's like the weak link.
It's like, oh gosh. And instead, these boys bonded together and they cheered him on. When this kid got a hit, it was like everyone's victory. And these little boys, they were like on top of the world. And they, after the game, they carried him. He felt on top of the world. So they felt stronger to get to show up for him. And I would say this about your son, Megan, is that he gets to be the supportive brother in his understanding, in his patience, in his willingness to be this valuable team player who's there to cheer his sister on and to support her. And so every chance you can get where you have a private conversation with him, you remind him of that. You remind him how amazing he is and what a supportive, beautiful brother he is, and how he comes from such a place of kindness and generosity and being part of the solution. And his patience level is unbelievable. And you focus on that. It will feel hugely empowering to him. The other thing is I teach a tool, as Emily can speak to, called PET, which is present, engaged, time. And I actually write about this in my book as well. And surprisingly, it's only 5 to 15 minutes. So 5 to 15 minutes of present engaged time, which is you 100% with your child, meaning like no phone, your phone's down, following his lead. And 5 to 15 minutes with him where he's got mama's full attention. It may just be 5 minutes. And it's you totally engaged with him. And it might be having one of these conversations. It might be reading a book with him. It might be him helping you with dinner and y'all chopping together. Just 5 to 15 minutes to really fill his love cup every single day prioritized will be huge for you guys. And also realizing like, he gets the value of being that supportive team player. He's not getting the shaft. He's getting that. And the more you can kind of foster and celebrate that, like, that's huge for him. Yeah. So stop feeling guilty about that.
Yeah, I think that's great. And she also wanted to know all of your strong-willed child tips. How do you raise a kiddo who is exactly like you?
Well, I don't think I have time for all the tips because I have a 30-day brain retraining course that really focuses on this a lot. But what I would tell you, the overall general theme is I believe that it's an invitation to kind of investigate and learn about yourself on a deeper level. You know, I think it's hard to look within because, you know, we don't want to. Right? We know the things that challenge us. We don't want to, a lot of times it's easier just to kind of deflect and.
Well, and there always seems like there's a quick fix somewhere that you don't have to do that.
Right.
You know?
Right. Like if you've got a strong-willed kid who's got a sensitive nervous system and life is more stimulating for them, you know, and you identify with that, Like, you know what you've done as a coping mechanism to deal with life being more stimulating for you. So then when you see your child struggling with the same kind of things that you've struggled with, it is so triggering because you don't want them to experience maybe the pain that you've experienced. Mm-hmm. And so what I say is let's shift this. Let's take it as an invitation. Like, I love my kids so much, and I would have loved for someone to have shown up for me in this way. And I'm going to show up that way for my child. I'm going to honor the fact that when they're acting out, it's because they're feeling overstimulated and unregulated on the inside. And I get it. I've been there too. Mm-hmm. So how do I manage myself and model that for my child? So I would say it's an invitation to investigate yourself and to look within and to honor who you were born to be and how you're wired versus trying to constantly deflect away from that or figure out a temporary coping strategy to not have to face it. Be willing to face it. And work on better coping strategies for yourself and model that for your child. And then when you sit with your strong-willed child, let them know, I mean, I'm going to go back to the empathy thing again. I get it. I've been there. I live this too. There's no one that understands this more than me. And hold space for them. Mm-hmm. Let's be here together. I'm here for you. I'm your mom. I'm your soft place to land. And I get it more than anyone else. So it really is kind of self-inquiry and being willing to grow alongside your child and model all those skills for your child ends up being a really, really beautiful thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And don't forget to breathe, right?
Breathing is everything. You know, when you're feeling that triggered crazy sensation on the inside, that's the thing that no one is learning. We should be teaching our kids this from, I mean, they should teach it in schools. We should teach it from as 18 months old. Sniff the flowers, blow out the birthday candles. It is really our access to like natural Prozac. Mm-hmm. And when we're feeling all out of control on the inside, it is the number one tool to help manage our own biochemistry. So when we start doing this for ourselves and we model it for our kids, it is the best thing we could do for them. Yes.
Yeah. And as you always say, if we remain calm, then we can solve any problem.
That's exactly right.
So breathing, get calm, get to what you need to do.
Yeah. I just made a visual. I don't know if you've seen it, but I made a visual to Emily, cause she's in my group. I made a visual for the kids calm down corner and I made a visual for the moms or the parents actually.
See that.
Yeah.
That's
calm awesome. Down corner. And it was three steps. It's the acronym Q-tip, quit taking it personally. When your child's acting out, it's not about you. It means that they're acting on the outside the way they feel on the inside. Mm-hmm. So quit taking it personally. Number two, breathe. And I did a little visual of the box breath. So you guys look up the box breath if you don't know. If you're like, breathe, what are you talking about with breathe? If you're not into yoga, you can look something up called the box breath. It's what Navy SEALs do. It's this amazing tool. So I did a little visual of the box breath. And then number three, I put, no one's going to die, ... And I use the word die because literally when you go into a triggered state, you go into a state of fight or flight, which is really your brain like thinking it sees a tiger in the jungle. And so when we say, like I used to say, no one's going to die if we're 5 minutes late to preschool, because I'd get all crazy when it was time to go to preschool and we were running late because I didn't get my stuff together, whatever. I'd be like, no one's going to die if we're late to preschool. And that was just my way of kind of going back to the higher centers of my brain, keeping my cool so that I could think of exactly what I needed to do to get us into the car without having like a total freak out and meltdown.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. Megan's last question was, what would you tell the parent of a sensitive child without breaking them of the sensitivity, but also preparing him for the real world where people just aren't kind?
Again, Megan, I would work on your thinking about people just aren't kind, because I think there is a lot of kindness in the world, and I think that what we focus on grows. So when we show up in a kind way and we know how to be assertive, we attract more kindness into our life and we focus more on that kindness. I call myself, I study something called the highly sensitive person. It's a theory that 20% of the population has a more sensitive nervous system. And I don't happen to fall into this category, but many members of my family do. And now I call myself a highly sensitive person wannabe because I honor it so much. I truly believe that high sensitivity is your superpower when you learn to see it that way. So I would start having productive conversations with my sensitive child and teach them how to feel into their body, notice what sensations they are having when they are noticing their nervous system being taxed, where they feel it in their body when they feel joy and happiness and fun, and where they feel it in their body when they feel stressed and unregulated. And so I would teach them that skill, and I would teach them that this high sensitivity is actually their superpower because they feel things deeper than 80% of the other people. Mm-hmm. They pick up on energy. They pick up on so much. I used to tell my highly sensitive son, he is my little Yoda because he sees a lot of times in black and white. He can tell like kind person from unkind person. You know, he can tell who he always chooses the best people to sit next to. Mm-hmm. He's a loyal friend and he attracts amazing people into his life. And so I would say like, help me with this because I'm only seeing in gray because my brain isn't wired like yours. I need to know what the truth is. And he would say, oh yeah, you're totally wrong on that. Or no, that person's not a good person. And so what I taught him was that he was super intuitive and he was able to feel things in a deeper way, like from the get-go than I could. And so he honestly feels like it is his superpower now. And I said to him, he was home from college, like, I don't know, when, like maybe a year ago, and he had all these plans. He was constantly, and he's, you know, he's my sensitive guy. So he likes to kind of hole up at home a lot and re-energize. So every time I turned around, he was going with this group or that group, and he had never been like super social. And I'm like, what's going on with all the plans? And I think he was 19 at the time, and he's like, I'm a likable guy. People want to sit next to me. I'm a likable guy. Like what the conversation over the years had done for him was build tremendous confidence. And so he's like, yeah, of course I have a lot of plans because I'm a loyal, good guy. And so people like me, they enjoy me. And it was just this like beautiful way that he was celebrating himself.
That's so awesome. Yeah. I love that idea of making kids feel like they're superheroes. Everyone wants to be a superhero. And
totally.
Instead of feeling like something's actually wrong with them, you know, turning it around completely.
Yeah. One of my friends calls me the master spinner because like what I've been saying to Megan, what we have to change our thoughts on this. But why wouldn't we think more positively all around? And this is what I've learned. I have retrained my brain to think this way. This is not who I was years ago. Mm-hmm. Like I was so much more of a negative person. And so, and I really have taught myself these skills and retrained my brain through parenting and learned to think differently through parenting. Because what I learned originally in conscious discipline was what you focus on, you get more of. What you focus on grows. So when you focus on telling children the behaviors and reinforcing the behaviors that you do want versus what you don't want, stop and no and don't. And instead, it's the three-year-old that has the new baby and they're being too rough. Gentle hands, babies are fragile. That's right, gentle hands. Look at you. You're such an amazing big brother. You know exactly how to touch your baby. Mm-hmm. Like retraining yourself to focus on the behaviors you want also helps you to retrain your brain to think the positive thoughts that you want and attract more of that into your life.
Yes, definitely. Cool. Well, Randy, thank you so much for coming on today and being with us. And I think this is going to be some very helpful information for all the mamas out there. If you want to learn any more or listen to more of Randy, you can check out her podcast. It's called Mastermind Parenting Podcast. You can get it through the iTunes app. You can also visit her website at randyrubenstein.com.
Thanks so much for having me. This was fun.
You have been listening to The Cold Coffee Club, brought to you by Houston Moms Blog. We wish you a fabulous week with your family and look forward to sharing many more cups of cold coffee with you.